Is it a rising star or just a flash in the pan? Next on Principles and Policies.
Welcome to this edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michael.
It's good to be back with you, Barry. It's good to talk to you. As we predicted, spring is coming. Isn't that amazing? It's like it comes every year at this time.
Technically it's already here, but you wouldn't know it by the... Well, you might think of it by the weather, but just wait another day and it'll change your mind again.
Well, it is Ohio. As we speak tonight, we are recording on Thursday. The Relationships Under Construction banquet that we've been advertising is tonight. So
if you're hearing this on Saturday, we're happy you joined us, or we're sad you missed it.
That's right. And Mike O'Reilly from WLRY is going to be there tonight. You're going to be there tonight, hopefully, if you're feeling better.
I'm going to be there, yes.
Very good. It's going to be a fine time tonight, and hopefully we will be very successful. We've had some incidents at our church, and some of my people may not show up because we had a member of the church's mother died.
Right.
And, of course, the viewing is tonight at 5 o'clock. Well, they don't consult us. They don't consult RUC about when to have these things. And so
I wouldn't think they would.
No, it's not something. But in any case, we will... I can't skip out. I'm an elder, and I should go to this thing, but I can't because I'm also part of the RUC program. I'm the sort of the audio-visual guy. I become an indispensable part of the program. So it's very difficult. I would much prefer to go be a comfort to one of the members of the church, but I've got this prior commitment. This is the kind of thing you run into, folks, when you have these kind of responsibilities.
But again, Chuck, this is a reason why in the system that, you know, of
a multitude of elders, that's
church,
right.
Church, we have a multitude of elders, so yes, so therefore you have it because, you know, it's...
The problem
you can't
is
always be everywhere at once.
Well, sure. The problem is that one of the other elders has a table, and he's trying to figure out how to juggle duty, and another one of the elders is supposed to come sit at my table, so we'll just see how many people actually show up. That's the kind of thing you run into when you run banquets, especially this time of year. This is we're reminding ourselves that this is not the best time of the year to run a banquet because there's too much going on. The NCAAs are going on. And, by the way, I'm a Michigan State fan because I am a Michigan State alumnus.
That's Michigan State now.
Michigan
not U of M.
State.
Green, not no blue.
That's right. Green and white, not, and I say repeat, not maize and blue. In fact, people don't know this. It's very, you know, because of the Ohio State Michigan State rivalry. But let me tell you something. You want to see a real rivalry? Go up, be at either Ann Arbor or East Lansing when those two teams are playing for any sport. I always joke that after the Michigan State Michigan football game every year, East Lansing burns, win or lose. And lately,
well,
it's been a lot.
That sounds like many college towns.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure it's Iowa State and Iowa, and you know all those intra-state rivalries.
Well, you know, the way I look at it, Chuck, as far as the March Madness, the NCAA's Final Four, all I was happy to see was that the quote-unquote perennial powerhouses and the quote-unquote media favorites were handed a slice of humble pie.
Well,
and are not appearing in the final.
That's right.
This is probably the least top-loaded final that I think has been the last few years because I think that the highest-ranked team in there is Virginia, And, of course, Michigan State was pretty high ranked, but they were not a number one seed, were they?
No, they were a four.
Like a two or a three seed, weren't they?
Yeah, I thought they were a four. But
or maybe it was a four seed. But anyhow, so, you know, you got those two, but then you've got, like, the and I'm not even sure to call them a Cinderella story because it isn't like the team that played in the first four to get all the way to the final. But you do have Auburn and Texas Tech, and it was great. You know, when I heard that Texas Tech had won and was going to the game, it made me start thinking. I'm thinking, okay, Texas Tech, is that the one that – no, because that's University of Texas El Paso. For any of you who have ever seen the movie Glory Road about the Texas Western Miners run up and win of the national championship, the NCAAs in 1966, and they fielded was the first college to field an all African American starting five for the final. And so I just watched that movie again last night with my wife because we think it's probably it would go in our top five movies of all time just based on the overall cut, not just the story, but the writing, the directing, you know, the camera work and everything is just great on that movie. So hey, if you haven't ever seen it before, do yourself a favor and go see it or grab a copy of Glory Road. You can't go see it now for a year, but it's a very moving story. Done well, yeah. That's that's the first time it made history. You know that you had a team, and especially a little team out in El Paso, Texas, that you know nobody expected to do anything, but ended up winning the NCAAs. So
yeah,
that's usually not the way the story goes. It's usually the Dukes, the Kentuckys, the Gonzagas.
What year was
back
that?
In the day, the Georgetowns of the world that would always be there and always win.
Yeah, what year was that?
1966 was the year of the championship. So it was the 65-66 season.
Well, what's interesting about some of that, the NCAAs didn't used to be the end-all and be-all. The end-all and be-all used to be the NIT.
Yeah, it used to be, yes.
The NIT was the tournament, and the NCAAs was essentially the also-rans, everybody who didn't get invited to the NIT. And then there was a shift. And
yeah, talk about flipping the script.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, nowadays, I don't think – I mean – There are a number of folks who, if you said NITs, wouldn't even know what you were talking about. Anymore.
Yeah, exactly. It's the NIT is the best of the rest, and it has gotten seriously the best of the rest since the NCAA's expanded to what 128 teams.
Oh no, the NCAAs are still at
64.
64 teams.
That's
but
right.
Actually, they've expanded to 68 in the sense that they now have what they call the first four. Which
yeah.
is the game that happens on the Tuesday before the Thursday, you know, start of the sixth of the round of 64. They leave two slots open in two different, and I think in one or two regions. And then the, you know, like the teams that would have been 63 and 64 then have to play the next two teams in the selection part, which is 65 and 66. They have to play each other to see who gets in because they feel like in that zone, maybe that's so tight that they have to actually play one more game in order to make sure they're making the right choice for number 8,
I know,
9, 15, or 16. You know,
it's like, that's you just, and I.
And I know what that's about.
Yeah.
That's not about,
no.
You know, being magnanimous and allowing a couple of smaller schools that maybe didn't, you know, weren't right there on the cusp enough to try to get in. It's so that the TV ad revenues and the betting can have another day's worth of play.
Yep, it's about selling tickets and for the gambling interests, essentially, and also for advertising for networks.
Because if you're telling me that a selection committee can sit in a room and they can figure out 62 of the teams, but they can't quite figure out 63 and 64 slots, and they need to have a play-in for that. I'm sorry, I'm not buying it.
Well, look, this is getting to be sort of like the NHL. You play the whole season. You play and play and play and play the whole season so you can see which six teams don't go to the playoffs.
Exactly. Because I think in each conference, eight teams make the playoffs. And yeah. It's like, and eight teams out of what? 10, 12?
It's ridiculous. By the way, I just want to make a correction. Michigan State was a 2 seed.
They're 2. Okay, so they are fairly high. I think Virginia might have been a 1 seed, but usually you have, like, it's usually 1s and 2s or 1s and a 2 and a couple of 3s. But, I don't think anybody survived this year. They talked about a guy after the first round. There was only one guy in the country whose bracket hadn't been busted, and it was like a neurosurgeon in Columbus. But by the next weekend, it was busted too.
Oh yeah, everybody. Look, that's the way. I don't gamble that way. I can remember a couple places I worked. They are you buying into the pool? You're buying into the pool? And I'm like, no, I'm not buying in the pool.
Well, good for you. Well, the way I look at it is I don't pay any attention to college basketball about 90% of the time anyway. I sometimes will if I'm driving, you know, during the season and it's at night and I'm coming from something and I happen to dial across a radio station that's playing an Ohio State basketball game. Sure, I'll sit there and listen to it because there's nothing else to do.
I was going to say, yeah.
Throughout the countryside, so why not? Yeah. It's not that big of an issue for me. Now, we did talk about flipping the script here as far as the NCAAs and the NITs, but I want us to do our transition game here, Chuck. I think we need to switch our dribble, and we need to go on and talk about another potential bracket buster who seems to be, or maybe he's not, flipping the script. And, you know, it's kind of funny that we were talking about this in light of the NCAA tournament because, like I said, the brackets are 66 teams that are out there. It's starting to look like the Democratic presidential primary.
I was going to say, I think
we're going to have to start setting up brackets and maybe we can make some money on the side here. I wouldn't do that.
Okay, but think about this, Barry. In 2016, in 2015, what did the Republican side look like? The Republicans.
Everybody knows that you know we had like 16. Announced and what would be considered at least halfway serious candidates. I mean, you had guys like Bill Weld and others in there who everybody knew didn't have a shot, but you had 16 candidates going into the debates. But really, I mean, if you looked at some of the regional candidates and some of the candidates who only filed in so many states. I forget how many there were, like 28 or so in the Republican side.
But how many actually got invited?
Only 16 got invited to the debate.
Yes, I think 16. Maybe there may have been one where 18 got in.
Yeah, I think there was because remember they had they did the tiered debates where they had like the also rans debate first.
Oh yeah,
like four to six. Of the ones who they didn't feel were like in the top tier, and then the top tier 8 or so or 10 ended up debating on the
right.
main stage.
And it was if you think about that's a joke, because what it shows is that
the NITs of politics.
It's the NITs of politics. Well, if you think about it, if you're going to have a debate and you run a tiered system like that, what are you saying? Basically, the media does its best to remain in control of who the leading candidates are.
Exactly. The media is barefacedly telling the American public, we're here to pick who your candidate should be, not you.
And witness one candidate that we've talked about who is the current golden boy. You and I talked offline. Who was it?
You mean for the Republicans?
No, for the Dems.
Okay, well, yeah, let's switch those gears back over here because, again, the Dems this year, right now, Chuck, you know, we talked about this. We went down that list here a couple of programs ago. There's at least, 14 right now? Who are absolutely now, again, Joe Biden still hasn't exactly announced he's actually in yet. But, again, of those, and we were, honestly, we were as guilty of it as anybody, Chuck. We were kind of doing the also-ran bracket as well. And one of the guys that we kind of talked about a little bit in the also-ran bracket is trying to punch his ticket for the big dance. And it's the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, one Pete Buttigieg. Now, we talked about Pete, I think, on our last program, or maybe the program before, and kind of talked about, you know, how didn't really feel like he might be moving that far. But all of a sudden, of course, as soon as after we put it out there on the media, everything changes. And so we have to come back and say, oh, well, okay, we're looking at that. Now, they're calling it the Buttigieg bump. Or is the way that the writers from 538 blog, which is ABC News' blog, Nathaniel Rakich puts it, Pete Buttigieg is having a moment. now, and he says that he's the hottest candidate in the 2020 race right now. Now, that's very interesting, Chuck. You know, it's great to be the hot candidate, but really, do you really want to be the hot candidate in April of 2019, or do you want to be the hot candidate in October of 2020?
Yeah, well, obviously, you want to be the hot candidate in October of 2020. now, for instance, let's go back to 2016 just for a second.
Sure, absolutely.
Who led the race gate to gate?
You mean the Democrat side?
On the Republican side.
Oh, on the Hubby side. Gate to gate?
Yep.
There was nobody.
Oh, yeah, there was.
Not gate to gate, my friend, because it kept shifting.
Well, okay.
Donald Trump came in like a dark horse because the front runner, in most people's minds, was either Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio.
In the eyes of the media. They kept
in the eyes of the media, they certainly wanted Jeb Bush.
But the fact is that Donald Trump had grassroots from gate to gate.
Oh, grassroots, yeah. He had a lot of ground support. You know, he didn't win New Hampshire, and no. I don't think he won Iowa either.
Nope.
But, again, what he did win was the hearts and minds of a lot of people as he was reaching out beyond the Republican base into the blue-collar Democrats, into the disaffected independents who were maybe somewhat libertarian, but not so far libertarian that they go Democrat. So there was an awful lot of, you know, build up with Donald Trump. Yeah. And of course, Chuck, Trump had a couple of advantages that some of the other candidates didn't have. First and foremost, he probably is more well off than most of them combined.
Exactly.
And number two, he had been doing this little thing called The Apprentice.
Yes, everybody knows The Apprentice.
On television, I think it was on ABC, wasn't it?
You got me. I honestly watched it. That
ran for at least three or four seasons and spawned the famous Trump line, "You're fired." Right? Yes, remember? Right. Everybody was saying, you know, "You're fired." Da, da, da. You know, in jest, but, you know, but the point is that Donald Trump was capturing the American imagination for about 4 years before announcing running for president. He had a media pulpit. He was, until he announced for president, he was warmly received by both Republicans and Democrats.
Yes.
And, you know, he'd get in some issues. There'd always be some issues about, you know, Trump Tower, Trump Taj Mahal, Trump Atlanta, you know, all of the real estate holdings and interests he had, you know, generated some controversy every once in a while. But again, you kind of expect that. But every time the controversy came up, well, it just put Trump's name in the news until the point where he actually announced for running for president.
Yep.
Then everything came to a screeching halt.
Yeah,
love affair between him and the Hollywood stars, and him and Democrats and Republicans, and I mean, you know, even to the point where at one point there were, I've seen photos of him standing with Bill and Hillary Clinton because obviously they were out there trying to recruit him a lot of his money.
Oh, sure,
for their causes. So,
and he gave money to...
He did give money.
He gave money to the Clinton Foundation, yeah.
Ran against Hillary.
Yep, he gave money to the Clinton Foundation. Now, let me ask you a question. Does Pete Buttigieg have anything like that kind of oomph?
Well, up until about 3 weeks ago, probably the vast majority of the American voting public had no clue who the mayor of South Bend, Indiana was. And I bet if you went to South Bend and did a on-the-street poll, probably at least 60% of South Bend residents weren't aware of who their mayor was.
I don't know if it's that high, but there would be a number of people who would not know who the mayor of South Bend, Indiana was.
There would be some who would know very well who he is, and that's probably because they might not agree with him. Now, Buttigieg, you know, has not, like, had this classic, you know, economic turnaround in South Bend, Indiana. He hasn't, you know, created them as a hot spot of international trade and things of that nature. And certainly he can't take any credit for probably the biggest draw that South Bend, Indiana has, which is the University of Notre Dame.
I was going to say, remember, it's a college town.
Yeah. It's a college town, and that college just happens to be the most recognized Catholic college on the face of the planet. You know, Notre Dame University. You definitely know what you're talking. Who's there? But I'm not even sure, and I haven't looked deeply enough into his background. I don't even know if he went to Notre Dame for college. But the one thing that Pete seems to have going for him to give him his bona fides with the Democratic base is that he's openly gay.
Yeah, that seems to be
his mantra. Oh, and he said nice things about Chick-fil-A last week.
Yes,
so
he did.
He's trying to reach across the aisle to the to disaffected evangelical Republicans, I would guess, who don't like Donald Trump and his rudeness, but would be okay with embracing someone who's openly living in an unbiblical lifestyle.
Here's what I predict for Pete Buttigieg. When they start asking him serious questions about foreign policy and the like, he'll fold up like a Chinese lawn chair.
Well, that may already be happening. And honestly, again, you mentioned this a little bit earlier, Chuck, and I'm glad you set it up this way, is who is the media trying to push forward to be their, you know, their standard bearer? In other words, who's the media wanting? Well, obviously, it sounds like CNN and ABC News and others are really pushing Pete Buttigieg right now because, you know, this opening paragraph from 538 is fawning, you know. Oh, if you believe the New York Times, he's more popular in New York than the city's own mayor. Well, yeah, and we also know that Bloomberg was planning on running for president, but I think he's backed off of that now.
Well, he's withdrawn. It's interesting that, you know, he served as mayor of New York City, if I'm not mistaken, as a Republican.
Well, he did, yes, but yeah, everybody knows that Bloomberg's actually a Democrat.
A Democrat, yeah, everybody's known yeah. that, yeah.
Well, because Cuomo's the governor of New York, but I think Bloomberg's still the mayor.
Not anymore.
So that's right, he stepped down, didn't he?
He didn't run. He finished up.
De Blasio, that's who the mayor is.
De Blasio, who they went from essentially an ultra-liberal Republican to a Marxist.
Yep.
Bill De Blasio.
Okay, yeah, and again, I'm looking at this New York Times article, and it's a fawning little piece with a lovely picture of Buttigieg surrounded by a bunch of 30 and 40-somethings that looks like a trendy little bar or club in New York City, and, you know, and they're trying to set him up like, you know, he's really, you know, resonating with people. But then it says, the Associated Press reported the crowds at Buttigieg's campaign events in South Carolina were so large and loud that they threw him off his stump speech. Well, if your crowd can throw you off your stump speech, you're probably not very good at giving a stump speech.
I was going to say, yeah.
And so this article in 538 keeps going, talk about, well, he's generated a lot of Google search interests and has attracted plenty of small donors. Now, supposedly, according to the Buttigieg campaign, that supposedly he's received donations from at least 65,000 people Now, why is that important, Chuck? Because that's one of the qualifications you had to have for getting invited to the debates.
Yes, exactly.
Yep. So he's out there talking about how much money he's raising and everything, and that's great. But I had to laugh at this article, because it seems like the highest point in support of saying that Pete Buttigieg's the hot candidate is a recent Emerson College poll that was done in late March that gave him 11% of the vote in Iowa, which Iowa is going to be one of the ground zeros for the first one of the first Democratic primaries. Well, that puts him in third place, Chuck, right? Now, it's very interesting because he got 0% support in January. So what's happened in the last 2.5 months that's created such a meteoric rise for Pete Buttigieg? Is it the media? Is it his resonating with so many people that he's talking to that he's just naturally building this organic base? Or could it be polling error? Polling error. Honestly, because as I'm looking at this, and they even say it, and I mean, they don't say that, you know, it's polling error, but he does point out, he says, well, you know, for more than half of the respondents to this poll that they put out there, they didn't randomize the order of the 14 candidates, and Buttigieg's name is at the top.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, the first thing you do as a legitimate polling is you always randomize and switch around the orders, because there's a psychological thing. When you're taking a poll of somebody, sometimes people, if they're nervous, they'll pick the first name that's on the list. They'll pick the first answer every time. And it's they've been looking at this. There's data on this, that candidates who are listed first in a poll have an advantage.
Sure.
That it is a benefit, and if you get a pollster who goes out there and is lazy, and am I saying Emerson College's poll is lazy? Yeah, I am, because this is laziness. Okay, first of all, you don't randomize the responses or the choices, and that's even down to the yes and no questions. If you always lead with yes, you're probably going to lean toward yes more than no. But if you randomize and have no as the first response every other one or something, then you're going to have a more even and more reliable poll. And so the way this survey was broken down, about 60-some percent took it by phone. Okay, now, Chuck, when you're taking a poll by phone, usually it's automated, right?
It depends, but yeah.
And then you have to press a number in order to make your selection. There are a lot of people who press 1 all the time just to get through it. So... And then the other portion of the polling populace took the poll online, and they did randomize the choices there. I mean, obviously, they must have had a program that mixed up the names each time some.
Yeah, it's not that hard to do, yeah.
Okay. Well, Chuck, here's my big problem with the Emerson College poll, and the reason why I think at 11% of the vote in Iowa is a phantom. The polling sample size was 249.
Oh, come on.
And the margin of error was plus or minus 6.2 percentage points.
Again, come on. With a 250,
supposedly, this is the splashiest data point in support of Buttigieg's bump. Excuse me?
It's like you've got a plus or minus 6.
Basing it on somebody walking into a... bathroom and asking anybody who's standing in there what they think of a candidate. That's basically what this is.
Okay, so basically he could be as high as 17 and as low as 5.
Well, he could be as low as 0, because according to some more data, that there were some other, there's a couple others that take a weekly polls, and it says that basically among respondents who live in early primary states, there was no bump at all.
Here's what I want to know. I'm reading the same article. It said 107 people took the poll online. It was randomized. I want to see those numbers versus the numbers they took on the non-randomized poll.
Oh, yeah. It's funny thing is that I think if you go to that link for the Emerson College poll, they actually have all reportable news Crosstabs.com. Okay, the good question is, does Emerson release their crosstabs? That's what you need, because yeah, it's crosstabs that show you. No, this, let me see, is there a full results? Yeah, you can get it. You can go down and you can pull the full results. Now, whether or not that shows all the crosstabs or not, anybody's best guess. But that means that Pete Buttigieg, the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, has more support and popularity among Democrat respondents than the following: Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, Cory Booker, Beto the Savior O'Rourke, Amy Klobuchar, John Hickenlooper, Tulsi Gabbard, Julian Castro, Jay Inslee, Kirsten Gillibrand, Andrew Yang, and almost, I mean, it was close that some of these people, like from Klobuchar on, the idea of someone else besides any of these candidates was more appealing to those Democrats than Klobuchar, Hickenlooper, on and on and on. Of course, the big winner was Joe Biden in the Emerson polling.
Who's not even an announced candidate, yeah.
Not an announced candidate, and then second to him is Bernie Sanders, who's basically been everywhere doing everything, and whose name is always in the media. So here we go. I mean, is Pete Buttigieg going to be the nominee for the Democratic Party?
No, he's not.
I would be very questionable about it. And the reason why I would be questionable about it is that even though the Democrat Party has a history of wildly overlooking the foibles of their own party's candidates, and we'll talk about Joe Biden in a minute, and while at the same time savaging anybody else, especially Republican candidates and Republican nominees, Pete Buttigieg may have created his own form of cognitive dissonance among his own base. Again, remember what I said. He has come out publicly and said that he likes Chick-fil-A. He doesn't agree with their politics, but he likes their chicken. That actually might lose him votes, Chuck, because as we know, there is a significant undercurrent of the Democratic Party that anytime you reach out and talk about anything that gives at least a remotely positive glow of a light to faith or to faithfulness, which is what they hate Chick-fil-A for, because they stand for biblical
values.
Right,
it has nothing to do with politics, because Chick-fil-A...
It has nothing to do with that, but it has to do with the, you know, lining everybody up to say that, you know, religion and faith, especially that of the Christian variety, is unacceptable because it doesn't allow for acceptance, tolerance, embracing, and normalizing of aberrant behaviors.
Well, remember that Tulsi Gabbard is in trouble because at one time she had expressed a support for traditional marriage, as had, by the way, Barack Obama in, before 2010. He'd been all about traditional marriage, according to him, and then all of a sudden he switched. Yeah. Now look, this we're getting into what I call the long knives. What's gonna, if Pete Buttigieg suddenly finds himself in a true leadership position that worries somebody in the other camps, you will see the long knives come out about something. Some revelation will come in from his past or his
and I said we're going to talk about Joe Biden in just a minute.
Oh my gosh! Okay,
that's the thing.
You want to see the long knife conspiracy right there? Everybody knows that if Joe jumps in, he'll be an instant leader of the pack. They want him out, and so they're hitting him up with this touchy feely thing.
Yeah,
so
let's pause that thought for just a couple seconds, because Pete Buttigieg obviously got some pushback, and I think that maybe he's smart enough not to believe his own polling, because he went out here just recently and doubled down and how he doubled down, I think, is very interesting, because there's an article in USA Today, of all places, from yesterday, with the headline, Mayor Pete Buttigieg's Countercultural Approach to Christianity is What America Needs Now. Now, what is this countercultural approach? Well, there was an interview. There's an MSNBC interview you can go and take a look at too. But basically, he says it's hard to look at the actions of President Trump and think he believes in God. And he's like, well, I'm reluctant to comment on another person's faith, but I would say it's hard to look at this president's actions and believe that they're the actions of someone who believes in God. Now, I want you and our listeners to remember what I said. What was Pete Buttigieg's biggest selling point, Chuck, to his base? now, keep that in mind while I read this next part, and these are quotes from Pete Buttigieg. Quote, I just don't understand how you can be as worshipful of your own self as he is and be prepared to humble yourself before God. I've never seen him humble himself before anyone. And the exaltation of yourself, especially a self that's about wealth and power, could not be more at odds with at least my understanding of the teachings of the Christian faith, unquote. Chuck, can you help me here? Because I don't understand how Pete Buttigieg cannot see the hypocrisy in what he's saying.
Well, he can't see it because the modern church, in many cases, has decided that they would rather go with a democratic approach to how to interpret God's law or whether or not to bother interpreting God's law on things like homosexual marriage or, as Doug Wilson always says, mirage.
Yeah, well, yes. That's what I'm getting at here.
Yeah, exactly. Pete Buttigieg basically is spitting in God's face by having a quote-unquote husband.
Is there anything much more worshipful of your own self as rejecting and denying the clear teachings of Scripture regarding your own sexuality?
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to make it look like I'm like saying all Pete Buttigieg has to do is just stop being homosexual.
No.
That's not the way this works. There are he's got an issue needs to be dealt with, and that's not the subject here. But the fact is that he has basically gone in like a lot of the modern church has and just said, well, God made him that way, and therefore it's okay because God right. made him that way. Well, God made a lot of people a lot of different ways. Well, he didn't make them that way. He allowed them to exhibit or to have desires to do things that are against his own law. Why? For his own purposes. What do you have an obligation to do when you have some of these desires? You have an obligation to suppress those desires. I will now be accused of being someone who would drive people to suicide and all that. No, I don't want that. I want them to get counseling so that they can deal with these impulses. Okay, that being said, does it spit in God's face to engage in an activity that you know God has forbidden? And the answer is, yeah, you are. You are spitting in God's face when you do that. And you're saying, me, me, me. It's all about me. My needs override God's needs for me to obey his law.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bottom line. There are all kinds of people that have all kinds of desires. Some people are involved in drugs. Some people are thieves. Some people are compulsive liars. All of which are forbidden, and yet nowadays you'll find somebody that God made me this way, and therefore I feel fine about it, and God's okay with it too. No, he's not. So
right. He's not.
Pete Buttigieg standing on his pedestal saying Donald Trump can't possibly believe in God. That's not a judgment for you to make, bud. considering your own issues with obedience to God's law. Bottom line.
Well, and he did qualify by saying at least his understanding of the teachings of Christian faith, which are fairly shallow, it seems, because he goes on and says, you know, that conservatives, and he was critical of conservatives, saying, quote, they saying so much about what Christ said so little about, and so little about what he said so much about, unquote. And he was basically referencing that comment to conservative support for pro-life.
Okay, God said plenty,
abortion. So he's basically saying that conservatives are majoring in the minors, and the biggest minor to him, obviously, in this respect, is defense of unborn human life. But he wants us to go into the majors and not minor in them, and he believes that, you know, he says that a lot of what it is we do believe in as a Democrat when it comes to protecting the sick and, well, as long as they're born, I suppose, and the stranger and the poor, as well as skepticism of the wealthy and the powerful and the established, unquote. That is his faith, Chuck.
And modern church.
Yeah, modern social justice church. Yeah. And, you know, honestly, He talks about the wealthy, the powerful, and the established, and to be skeptical of them. This is a guy who's just bragged that he raised $600,000 after one CNN appearance, and then twice here in the last 2 weeks has raised $500,000 each time after doing rallies.
Well, where's he going to raise money next? He's already announced he's going out to Hollywood to court the Hollywood left.
Well, wouldn't that be the wealthy, the powerful, and the established?
That's what I heard.
I guess skepticism only runs as far as how many zeros they put on their checks.
Well, that's part of it. And also, he is willing to... there are all kinds of things that the modern church, and by the modern liberal church, views as sacramental versus the more orthodox traditional church, and that is... The traditional church views God's law and his sacraments as sacramental, and the modern liberal church views things like abortion as sacramental, homosexual marriage as sacramental. The list goes on and on and on and on, and Buttigieg has basically said Jesus didn't talk about abortion, therefore it's forbidden. Well, of course he talked about abortion. He talked about it in the Old Testament. That's the problem.
There's the thing. There's the compartmentalization that only the words in red are Jesus' words.
Exactly false, because Jesus is God and God gave the law. Flat out. Jesus is God, the Holy Spirit is God, and the three of them, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, gave the law. Why did they give the law? In some cases, it was to set people apart. And as we've always said all along, as proponents of God's law, there are certain parts of the law that are passed away. Why? They're fulfilled in Christ. The sacrifices, the dietaries, some of the civil law that set Israel apart from its neighbors. You know, does God really care if you eat shrimp? Well, no, he doesn't, because he said so. How do we know? He said so in the book of Acts. What was Peter's dream? Take Peter, kill, and eat. And what was it full of? It was full of all the animals of the earth, including the formerly forbidden creatures. Well, what was the whole point? You know, what was Peter's response? Not I, Lord. Never have I, you know, partaken in these things. Well, the law is passed away. That law is fulfilled. It hasn't passed away. It's fulfilled. There's no point in it anymore. Jesus came and fulfilled it. What parts of the law still exist? Well, the creation law, the law of Genesis, one man, one woman. Murder, kidnapping, you know, go through the list.
Absolutely.
And here's the problem. The modern church says, no, only certain ones they're okay with murder, except when it comes to the murder of the unborn. Jesus didn't talk about that, so therefore murder is bad. And we got to take care of the sick unless they're unborn. And we have to take care of the poor unless they're unborn. They go through their list, and we say unless. Now, you know, do we believe in taking care of the sick? Yeah, we do. Do we believe that it's up to the government to confiscate wealth, scrape off a giant portion of it, like 75%, and then redistribute the rest? Well, no, we don't. We reject that. In fact, my wife and I were just talking. Because of Obamacare, our particular physician's practice that we'd been going to for years is completely different. It's completely really non-responsive. It's not responsive. It's all, every time I go in, have you had your flu shot? No, and I'm not taking one. Oh, I can't believe you wouldn't have a flu shot. Have you had this? Have you had this test? Have you had that test? I said, no, and I'm not going to. When are you having a colonoscopy? I'm like, I'm not. Why not? I said, because I am self-pay, and when I went in and priced it, I could have put a very large down payment on a new car with what it was going to cost me.
I recognize that.
Yeah. So don't give me this stuff. It's all rear covering. She's afraid that if I don't go in and have these tests, that what's going to happen is I'm going to come back and sue her. And I'm like, that's not the way I think. It's not your fault. If I pop up with colon cancer, you know, she does other tests to make sure I don't have that. But if I pop up with colon cancer, whose fault is it? Because I didn't go get a colonoscopy. It's mine. You know, so
yeah,
this is
absolutely
the problem that these guys want to remove personal responsibility. And are there going to be people who are perpetually poor? And unfortunately, the answer is yes. There are people that simply don't have the talents to make huge amounts of money. Now, what responsibility do we have? You know what responsibility we have? We have a responsibility to own and operate businesses in which people like that are brought in and given the best salary you can give them. But is it my responsibility to give them health care? No, it's not. But it is my responsibility to help out when I can. That's the whole reason why tithe agencies used to exist in the church. Why? To run things like hospitals. What's happened to all church-run hospitals? Are there any anymore?
I was going to say, I don't believe the churches are running them anymore.
You know, Riverside was a Methodist hospital. Mount Carmel was a Catholic hospital in Columbus, I'm talking about. There were always a county hospital system. How did the county hospital system work? If you couldn't pay, what happened to you in the county hospital? The county paid for it. How did it pay for it? Well, taxes mostly. And the taxes were still very low. You know, were people able to get, liposuction and lip enhancement and Botox injections on the county dime? And the answer is no. What'd you get? You got appendectomies, you got operations for cancer, you got all kinds of different treatments. Did you get top-notch treatment? You got the best they could give for the, you know, at the time. But there are doctors who have always volunteered their time. That's coming to an end, by the way. They have to. Doctor salaries are being severely restricted by the system through insurance companies who have always wanted to have control over what doctors charge. Always. And they've got it now through Obamacare. Obamacare has basically destroyed the patient-doctor relationship.
Oh, there's no doubt about that.
And especially as regards having to go through a hospital. Why do you think there's like 10,000 hospitals every place? Everywhere you go, the hospitals have become absolutely gigantic. Why? They want you in a hospital. Why? So they can basically collect. Insurance companies are of course fighting it, but the hospitals come in. You know, you look at what it costs. it's a giant boondoggle for corporations that run hospitals. This is what Pete Buttigieg thinks is a good thing. This is what the virtually all the Democratic candidates for president and governor and name an office think is a good thing. When was the last time you heard a Republican say, look, you know, everybody's talking about repeal and replace Obamacare? Well, that's basically going to happen. What does replacement mean?
But remember, it's not going to happen until after the 2020 election. Until after the 2020 election. Mitch McConnell.
Yeah. And what's it mean? It means we're shifting our wallet from our right-hand pocket to our left-hand pocket. And by the way, we're emptying it out and giving it to the medical industry while we're doing it. The fact is that the insurance companies are going to continue to be in charge of the healthcare system, which is a horrible thing. You know, we all understand that we want treatments for these advanced diseases. And I like the fact that I live in the 21st century where, you know, my life expectancy is pretty good. But what I don't like is having my pocket picked so that about maybe 25% of what my pocket got picked for actually gets to the people it's supposed to go to. You know what? I can, with a charity, through a tithe agency, it would be more like 90%. And that's the problem. The church used to run these agencies, and what'd they do? They surrendered them little by little by little by little, and there wasn't much squawking that went on while the government came in and said, you know, we can do this more efficiently than you can. And it turns out, of course, as usual, when the government wants something, that was a lie. And unfortunately, we've bought the lie, which is why we continue to be debating a failed system. Because Obamacare is a deeply flawed and failed system.
Absolutely is.
And yet, here we are. Well, we've got to do something. Yeah. Well, here's what we should do. Go back to a tithe agency system. How's that for being a Luddite? But again, guys like Pete Buttigieg, now, you know, I brought up the long knives. Who aren't you seeing long knives for? The Democratic long knives. You're not seeing it for Amy Klobuchar. Why? She got nothing. They don't need.
I was going to say, I just answered you by just dead silence.
She got
that's
zero.
All she's got.
Exactly. You did that very well. Well, point well taken. She got nothing. And now, how about Elizabeth Warren? Well, Elizabeth Warren essentially
is self-imploding.
It's self-inflicted. I mean, every time you turn around, she shoved another a long knife in her own back. So,
right. Well, her biggest long knife right now is she's not raising the money that she promised she'd raise, and so her finance director has quit, and it's looking like she's probably heading out of the race.
Well, more than likely. She honestly, did you ever think she was in? She would be someone you would take for that. A Pete Buttigieg who comes across as a middle of the roader, or an Amy Klobuchar who comes across as a middle of the roader, would pick an Elizabeth Warren as a counterweight to make it look like you're okay with the further left of the party. She would be vice presidential material. Essentially, Barack Obama picked Joe Biden for that same reason, because essentially Obama was a complete unknown. I mean, if you looked at his Senate career, he voted present a lot. Why? Because he had been running for president since he got elected to the United States Senate from Illinois. And he knew that if he voted present, there wouldn't be a record to go back and look at. Voila.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep. Voila. Now, some of the others, you know, Yang, who knows? The guy has sent such mixed messages. Again, long knives not necessary. He's not going anyplace. Really, Pete Buttigieg right now this is one of those guys that the fuse lights and he goes up like a rocket real early and he explodes and he makes a lot of, you know, like a firework. It goes up and he explodes and there's a lot of light and a boom and he's never heard from again. You know, you go to the, by the time you get to the debates, he's treated like John Kasich was in the Republican debates in 2016. Every once in a while somebody throws him a bone question, which he then mishandles. So really who's the race between? I think Joe Biden. Let's see. Right now Bernie Sanders, although he's going to fall away, I think. It's Kamala Harris. Cory Booker. There's
maybe
Cory again has a way of knifing himself in the back.
Yeah, Spartacus sometimes does.
Spartacus does that. Yeah, he's got that nice Roman.
Well,
that Roman
and he,
short.
And he was trying
sword,
to pick
yeah.
up instant and cheap cred by starting to date a Hollywood starlet, so that the media would pick up and start using his name more. That's not working. So.
Yeah, supposedly we were trying to keep this secret. No, you weren't.
No, you weren't. Yeah, that was. Planned out to try to get you media.
And oh, absolutely.
It got him media for about 5 minutes, and that was it.
Look, the fact is there is somebody running against Trump. I forget who it is now. That tells you where that guy's going to go.
Oh, it's William Weld.
It's Weld. That's right. Bill Weld.
Yeah, it's William
Weld. Former
Weld,
governor of Massachusetts.
Actually was part of what we call the Fatal Four in the 2016 debates as one of the guys who never made enough in the polling in order to make the main stage.
Yeah. No Republicans are going to vote for William Weld. Now, that might be who, for instance, Mitt Romney, that would be his shadow candidate. It could end up being when John Kasich finally announces his candidacy for the Republican nomination. That might be Mitt Romney's shadow candidate. Mitt Romney wants to pull the strings on any basically liberal Republican. Remember, this guy's a carpetbagger. He started out in Michigan. He's been in half the states in the union, I think. But he was governor of Massachusetts. Now he's senator from Utah, right? Yes, Utah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many?
Yeah, not Massachusetts, Utah.
How many major offices can you hold in how many states?
Well, supposedly, according to law, one in one. But hey, who knows?
Well, you know, thanks to Utah.
He'll follow the law like Pete Buttigieg will follow the Bible.
but if you'll recall, Romney Care was the precursor to Obamacare, and it was the model on which it was built. And Romney didn't have to do that. The same thing with homosexual marriage. Yes, the Massachusetts Supreme Court came out and said that it was unconstitutional, but you know what? The Massachusetts Supreme Court is not allowed by the Constitution in Massachusetts to change that law. All they could do was send it to the legislature as an opinion. And Mitt did it by an executive order.
Yes.
Which the legislature gladly went along with because they said, we didn't do this. So everybody could, but you didn't do anything to stop it. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter, Barry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so are the long knives going to be out? Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
These five that we named are really going to be jabbing at each other. So
yeah, and it's just interesting to when we find out exactly who put the bug in Lucy Flores's ear to start jabbing at Joe Biden.
That's exactly. One thing, we're out of time, but I wanted to bring that up. You watch these women who are out basically sticking the knives in Joe Biden's back, find out who they support. You're going to find out it's Kamala Harris.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to find out it's Bernie Sanders. I doubt that. It's mostly going to be Harris. And
then when you start looking at Harris, you find out that pretty much most of her campaign team were Hillary's campaign team.
Exactly. Exactly. You're going to find that that Hillary Clinton is pulling some strings by remote control, even though she's, you know, there was some talk that she might jump in. She's not getting in. She's done. But she's not done pulling strings. Bill is, but she's not. Well, that being said, you know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.